Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. This right here is Nick Wright. We are midway through the week. We got a lot of storylines surrounding the NFL. Jerry Jones is not taking the Saints lightly, even without Drew Brees under center. Carson Wentz isn't giving up on the Eagles season, even after starting 1-2. And Aaron Rodgers is well aware that his offense needs to step it up, and soon. And by soon, I mean, tomorrow night. Thursday Night Football on Fox. It is the Packers and the Eagles from Lambeau Field. Yes, Green Bay is undefeated, but also, yes, is the reason why. It's not number 12, it's that stout defense, something we haven't said in recent years. But Rodgers, who couldn't heap enough praise on this defense so far this season, would love to start doing the same about that offense.
The standards are very high for us. We got to play a lot better on offense. We've played some good defenses, no doubt about it, but the standard and the expectations are very high here, and we haven't met them on offense. Thankfully, our defense has not only been opportunistic but stout, holding them to field goals in the red zone, taking the ball away, putting us in good field position. It's time for us to do our part on offense moving forward. We're going to play some, a stretch of really good football teams, and at some point, we can't expect our defense to shut everybody down. They have been. But at some point, the offense is going to have to wake up and start making some plays.
You guys know this about Aaron Rodgers. He's very calculated about the things he says. He usually has an agenda at those sort of faux press conferences after a game. How can the Packers offense get on track against the Eagles tomorrow night? He well admits that it just hasn't been so far this season.
Right. Well, the thing that Aaron and the offense, one of the problems is you don't want to overreact, because the number one stat is, can the quarterback get his team on the winning bus? Can they win games? And they've been able to do it. Now, it's totally different than the style that they're used to, but Aaron Rodgers is going to have to ask himself the question, is it more important for me to win, or is it more important for me to win with style points? Because if you look at Tom Brady and what they do in New England, regardless of what kind of game plan Josh McDaniel and Belichick come up with on a Monday, Brady totally buys into it. And that might mean we're going to run the ball 50 times. We're going to play two tight ends, a fullback. We're going to play four receivers. Brady is the absolute best at that because he's absent of ego, realizing that it's so important for him to buy in. Can Aaron continue with this defense? Preston, Za'Darius Smith, these guys getting to the quarterback, turning the ball over. Like, they are benefiting from all the money that they've spent in free agency this past offseason and their draft the last couple years. But Aaron's got to ask himself, is this okay? I do believe that the offense will gain some continuity as they go through the season. But you're not going to put up a whole bunch of numbers on the Vikings and on the Bears, so I'm not going to overreact. But I look for them to be able to get on track. Aaron did miss some time during training camp. So there is time for this offense to get on track. An injured Philadelphia team coming in on a short week in Lambeau. Huge advantage for the home team. I wouldn't be surprised if Thursday night you started to see Aaron start to throw for 275 to 300 and that offense be close to 400 yards.
Nick. And I want the audience to know, if they haven't been watching the Packers closely, it's not as if the offense has been going great. It's just been relying on the running game. So the offense scoring a lot of points, converting third downs, yet Rodgers' numbers aren't there. The offense as a whole has been bad. It's been a bottom five offense. They're 29th on third down. They're 27th passing the ball. They're 24th running the football. They're 23rd on points scored and 26th in points per drive. So the offense as a whole, by any metric, has been bad. The one stat the offense has been good on, to Chris's point, is the offense is 3-0 because the team is 3-0. The number one thing they can do right now is improve on third downs. Give themselves a better chance to stay on the field. 9 third down conversions on the season on 36 possible attempts. That's going to be bad no matter who your quarterback is, much less your quarterback as talented as Aaron Rodgers. What I think is hurting them and what won't be fixed this Thursday, even if they win Thursday, and I think they will, is who is their third receiver? We know Devontae Adams is one of the most underrated receivers in the league, and Marquez Valdez-Scantling, the young receiver, has come into his own a bit this year. Chris, there's not another receiver on the team, not running back, not tight end, not another receiver on the team that has 30 yards this season. So if you're a defense, you're saying, let's take away Devontae, see if Valdez-Scantling can beat us, and if he can't, it's tight ends and running backs. They need to have a more diversity of weapons available to Rodgers. I think that will help the third downs. That will help the offense get going. Not to mention, right now, Aaron Jones on a per-touch basis, even though we said last year and the year before maybe he should get more touches, he's been less effective despite being more featured the first couple weeks. They went to Williams more last week because of Aaron Jones' ineffectiveness. So the offense as a whole is really stalling, running game, receiving, and quarterback play.
It might be too early to ask, but it is still worth the ask. At some point, do you see Aaron Rodgers go off the LaFleur script and say, let me try to maybe juice up our numbers by doing things on my own, the Aaron Rodgers way? Because we spent all offseason talking about him buying into the system that LaFleur was bringing out, whether it was going to work or not. So far, the defense has really helped him do that. When do we see him kind of play his own game?
Yeah, it's a legitimate concern. When you have Aaron Rodgers and you talk about some of the things he's been through before and him disagreeing with coaching decisions before, I don't think it's necessarily just disagree, just total disobedient. But what I think is he'll start to hold the ball a little bit longer and start to wait for guys to get open and try to make plays with his legs. If he begins to press, that's what I see him doing. I don't see him trying to go back to their old audible system, trying to do a no huddle, things like that. But even guys like Aaron Rodgers, if he doesn't have success with this new coach, with the new system that they're running, I wouldn't be surprised to see Aaron Rodgers do what he does. What do? Scramble to the right, ad lib, direct traffic, make some deep throws down the field. So I will be watching that. But Aaron should be so satisfied at this point in his career, just like John Elway, after having all that success, taking Denver to Super Bowl after Super Bowl and not being able to get over the hump. They added a running game and defense. That's how John won those last two Super Bowls. Aaron, that wouldn't be a bad model. And we would know late in games, then you give Aaron Rodgers a couple chance. That, to me, is the best Green Bay team moving forward.
And I want to see what they look like, which they will at some point, might be as early as Thursday, when they're not playing from ahead. They were down 3-0 against Chicago in that first quarter. And then Rodgers had the one big play in that game. Thursday night football, the deep play downfield. That's the last time they trailed. They have trailed for less than 7 total minutes all season in 180 minutes of football. So I think it's easier to play conservative, stick with the coach's plan when you're always ahead. Because the defense has been so great, because they're not turning the ball over, something Rodgers, even in a down year last year, what do you have, 25 touchdowns, 2 picks? He's been great at taking care of the football, throwing it away instead of throwing it in traffic. He's not incentivized to take big chances.
Right.
They're playing with a lead. They're in control. If they do get down 14-3 in one of these games, which of course they will, every team does, how do they respond there? That's something I'm really interested in, but it's one of those good problems because they haven't had that problem yet.
Matt LaFleur said when asked about the stalled offense, don't worry, there's more out there. How much of this do you put on him and generating more plays and more options for that offense?
Well, I do put a lot on him, especially the third down. I want to see him be a little more creative on third down. Nick talks about the lack of having a third receiver. Jimmy Graham hadn't been healthy, still missing some practice time. So will he be at 100%? But your creativity, we can't blame everything on Tennessee. okay? Because right. they've been like, oh, I'm going to run the Tennessee offense. Okay, but you have Aaron Rodgers. I am dependent on some creativity, and that should be in the red zone. You should see that from the new young coach. And on third down, you should see some creativity. And that's his responsibility to Aaron Rodgers and that football team to boost up that third down percentage so they can keep those drives going. Because the longer Aaron stays on the field, the more reps he gets in this offense, the more fear he's going to put in NFL defense.
But the reason why Aaron Rodgers, while calculated with his remarks, is clearly not panicking and seems to be in a good overall mental state is when you saw they had Chicago and Minnesota in the first two games of the year, and if we'd have told you 3 weeks in, only the Titans, Bears, Dolphins, Vikings, and Jets would have fewer yards passing. You have that schedule, you've been that ineffective passing the ball, and you're 3-0 with an opportunity to go 4-0 with a home game against a injured Philly team, he'd be flying. So you will deal with this because you're winning, as opposed to in years past where Rodgers leading the league in passer rating, top three in touchdowns, and the team's 2-1 or 1-2 wondering what is going wrong. So right now they have a little margin of error to figure it out.
All right, Packers and Eagles, Thursday Night Football on Fox. It'll be a good one. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. Cowboys off to a blazing 3-0 start.
Only thing dark was the yard markers on the field.
With perhaps their biggest test coming Sunday night when they face the Saints, a Saints team that looked strong in last week's win over the Seahawks, which, by the way, was in Seattle. New Orleans putting the league on alert that they're not taking a step back without Drew Brees. Teddy Bridgewater looked good. And Jerry Jones, the first to tell you, he's not taking the Saints lightly.
Boy, they have so much team-wise that to compete with, as they illustrated against Seattle, out in Seattle, of all places. Listen, from top to bottom down there, Mickey Lomas and, of course, Sean, and they're built for action and built to play and built to win football games, and they're thinking way ahead. They look around corners, to use some cliches here, but that Teddy Bridgewater, everybody knows that he's a talented football player, and he's very capable of, with people like Sean Payton giving him, tutoring him, he's very capable of being all you want at quarterback. And so, I don't see anything but we're going to have to really have a lot going for us to get out of there with a win.
All right, so what challenges, Nick, do the Saints' offense present without Drew Brees in there?
Well, both sides of the ball, not just Saints' offense. Obviously, without Drew Brees, the Saints' offense is not the same. But you still have Alvin Kamara. It's still going to be a hell of a test for that great Cowboys linebacking core. You still have what I would consider your first true road game of the year. Dallas playing against Washington with that beaten down fan base. I would watch that game. That was about 40% Cowboy fans. That will not be the case in New Orleans. Superdome going to be fired up. But I'm more concerned for Dallas on the other side. Drew Brees doesn't play D-line. No matter who plays quarterback for the Saints, this defense is going to be the toughest test Dallas has faced by an enormous margin. When you play the Giants, Washington, and Miami, one of the reasons Dak has looked so great is because he's been so clean, he's had so much time, and he's been able to go through his progressions. The Saints will be the toughest pass rush this Cowboys team has faced by a wide margin. The Giants got no pass rush, the Dolphins don't have much of anything, and Washington doesn't have pass rush right now. So how will Dallas offset legitimate crowd noise for Dak to operate their offense, a legitimate pass rush for the first time, because as Jerry alluded to, the Saints are going to find a way to manufacture some offense. Now, I don't think they're going to have a defensive and a special team score this week the way they did against Seattle, but that was on the road in Seattle as opposed to at home at the Superdome. So this is the Cowboys' toughest game of the year by an enormous margin, even though Drew Brees is not playing for the Saints this week.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is someone like New Orleans, Sean Payton, Mickey Loomis, which Jerry mentioned, he mentions a lot of good things. They've won a lot of games together, especially the last couple years. You know, NFL recent history, it's only a couple years, but we talk about Cleveland. What are they trying to learn? They're trying to learn how to win. This Saints team, 13 wins last year,
and 11 the year before.
11 the year before that. That's 24 during the regular season and postseason success. They know how to win, so they know they're not going to panic, even though they're used to having Drew Brees. But you got to make, if you're Dallas, you got to make New Orleans play without Michael Thomas dominating and without Alvin Kamara dominating, because without them, where are they going to get the productivity from? You mentioned, no, you're not going to get the bounces. You're not going to be able to do the things that you are able to do against the Seahawks. You can't depend on that. But for Dallas to be able to win this, you know Teddy Bridgewater is challenged as far as his overall arm strength. All right, you have to force him to be able to throw the ball deep down the field and throw it to other people. I think this is a good matchup for Dallas, especially offensively, too, because not only are they going to face a better rush, they're going to face tighter pass coverage.
Yep.
The Saints blitz an awful lot. They do play a lot of combination and man-to-man coverage. So I think this is going to be a good football game. Teddy Bridgewater, you can't allow him to be a game manager, and that's what happened in last week's game, his first start there with the Saints.
And Nick, we've talked the last couple weeks about how beneficial it's been to the Cowboys to be able to sort of rest Zeke and ease him back into it. Are we going to see full package
100%.
Of Zeke Elliott?
Listen, the Saints defense has not been great this year except for rushing the passer, where they've been a top 10 team.
Mm-hmm.
You have been ramping Zeke up for this, not just the final 13 games of the season, but this stretch right here.
Yep.
New Orleans and Green Bay, back-to-back weeks. Two teams that if the Cowboys continue on this trajectory, we could be talking about home field advantage tiebreakers with. There's a lot of big things at stake for the Cowboys next 2 weeks, so you give your best player the football as much as possible. And on the other side, you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy didn't throw one pass longer than 15 yards in the air last week. And so they were not going to let him make any mistakes, and it was going to be constricted.
Dallas, so that was by design.
It was by design, and Dallas knows that. This field is going to be shortened enormously when the Saints have the football. They're going to dare Teddy Bridgewater to try to beat him over the top. Michael Thomas is a great receiver, but one of the reasons we talk about you and him similarly is not just the hands and the school,
right,
but it's not as much fear of someone going on a nine route down
the
field.
He's the ultimate possession receiver.
Exactly right. And so that does fit Teddy's skill set. But that also means you are going to be able to have you're not going to have a safety over the top at all times for Dallas. So there's there's a really interesting matchup because it is the first Saints-Cowboys game in recent memory where you feel like, oh, the Cowboys got the benefit of the better quarterback. How can the Saints offset that when in years past that wasn't the case? Now, I will say this, Cowboys went to New Orleans last year, I think it was on a Thursday night, and shocked New Orleans in a defensive game. It was 13-10. That game when Dallas looked like their season was teetering.
Drew was looking for a little revenge factor, I'm sure.
Absolutely, and he's going to miss the game. So even without Brees, I think this could be a great game. I'm really interested to see how Dallas does against the Saints pass rush. If they can handle that, there's no reason they shouldn't win the game.
Yeah, it should be a very good game. I'm interested to see Dak continue to take that next step, because what we do with quarterbacks, if we're not on the bandwagon, we either kind of dilute their stats. Oh, it was the opposition. You know something? It was Miami's fault. Oh, it was Washington. This will be a good challenge for him, and I expect them to continue the things they've been doing. Attack down the field. Dak is not a manager of a game, not like what they have in New Orleans with Teddy Bridgewater down. Watch for them to be on the attack, and watch how many throws he does make. Over 15 yards compared to Teddy Bridgewater.
Dallas with a chance to go 4-0 to start the season.
Stop what you're doing and look down at your left wrist, because our friends at Movement Watches have got exactly what you're missing. Movement has you covered with tons of quality, clean, and all-around good-looking watches and accessories that we can actually afford and order right from our couch. Do your wrist and wallet a favor. Go check out their minimalist designs that you can have with no risk, because they offer free shipping and returns. With over 2 million watches sold worldwide, Movement has solidified themselves as one of the fastest growing watch brands out there. They also have tons of sunglasses and offer interchangeable watch straps, so you never run out of options for a new look. Movement watches start at just $95, so you're guaranteed to find something you love that won't break your bank. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to movement.com/first. See why Movement keeps growing. Check out their expanding collection. Go to mvmt.com/first. Join the movement.
We're going viral. See, you spent your first three seasons in Philadelphia. Brian Westbrook was on the show yesterday.
Oh, yeah, that was my first NFL game.
Talking about
first catch for a touchdown.
Oh. What a great time he had at Eagles alumni
that's
weekend.
The Jets. So, last game of my rookie year.
Where was your invite to alumni weekend, CC? Take a look.
How good is Philadelphia going to be? Because right now, the Philadelphia Eagles, they got a curse on them, all right?
Oh, you're cursing them?
Yeah, they dropped 7 passes last weekend. They had alumni weekend. They didn't invite the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter, to alumni weekend.
Man.
Aguilar drops one week, number two. They dropped 7 last week. Y'all want me to lift the curse?
Go.
Invite me back.
He's got a lot more going on.
Eat it, Philly. You're cursed.
Yep.
All right, well, Lil B, the base god, knows a thing about curses. He responded to UCC, quote, "I'm always watching and ready. Go first things first. Love. Hashtag blessed."
Okay, so we got Lil B in the bullpen. No need to put the official curse on him, because that wasn't alumni weekend. That was the ring of...
That's when you found out.
Yeah, I had a couple people call me and everything to get back to me, but... Yeah. It was their Ring of Honor ceremony, and the guys in their Hall of Fame were there, so it wasn't their official alumni weekend. But we're putting it on hold. If they don't invite me to alumni weekend, it's in full effect.
Did they follow it up with a future invite?
But hold on. You're letting them off the hook.
No, I'm not letting them off the hook. They haven't had the event yet.
Why aren't you in the Ring of Honor?
No, because I didn't do enough to beat her. That's not right. I shouldn't be.
Alumni is anyone that played for him for any significant amount of time.
Yeah,
Ring of Honor is the best players in team history.
No, you can't. I definitely don't qualify for that.
Oh, now definitely. I understand why you're
so fired. Now, in the streets of Philadelphia, I'm in the Ring of Honor in the streets of Philadelphia.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Not in the stadium.
Exactly,
actually, the street
man.
Work
now
got
street
me
legend,
out of the
Chris
stadium
Carter.
And got me unemployed.
Now I understand.
The streets talk, though. They let you know.
Streets of Philly calls Chris the Philly Ring of Honor. Got the Minnesota Ring of Honor.
Yep.
Stories to start your morning.
It's all about them smiley faces in Philadelphia.
By the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. All right, the news. Get serious, guys, because we're Cam Newton. The news gets worse. He's reportedly dealing with a Liz Frank injury.
He'll be okay.
Could be sidelined for some time. He'll eventually be
okay. Could use some of those smiley faces.
That means it's Kyle Allen's job for the foreseeable future. See, can the Panthers possibly stay in the hunt without Cam Newton?
No. No, absolutely not. No, I know Kyle Allen looked good last week. I do have a lot of faith in Norv Turner and Scott Turner, but Cam Newton being the dual threat that he is, the overall physicality, when this team is good, what do? They play top 10 defense, and they run the ball, and they throw the ball deep down the field. Without Cam Newton, no, I don't see them as being a contender, even though this division is still up in the air.
Well, Nick. Yeah, I mean, let's see how New Orleans does. I'm out on Tampa, and I'm out on Atlanta. And the next month, right, at Houston, home for Jacksonville, at Tampa, and then the bye week. If Cam's only out 4 weeks, can Kyle Allen help them get to 2-1 in the next 3 games?
Yes.
If you do that and Cam comes back at 3-3, you're treading water, you're alive. If they go 1-2 over the next 3, Cam comes back at 2-4, or if he is out on the 8-week side of 4 to 8 weeks, then they're cooked. But if he's out just 4 weeks, since they have the bye mixed in there, I think they could be okay. But the idea that when Cam's healthy, Kyle Allen could be the starting quarterback, that to me is utter foolishness.
Yeah, they need to try to get McCaffrey that 1,000 receiving, 1,000 rushing.
Get Gerald McCoy going. We saw the Brian Burns, the defensive end, had a big game this week, and see if he can continue that.
All right, moving on to Jalen Ramsey. Here's the quick timeline. Ready? Sideline argument with Doug Marrone week two, demanded a trade. Played week three, has not practiced this week after claiming to have the flu. Now reportedly will show up to the Jags facility today. And scene. Nick, how do you think all this ends?
Well, the Jags are seemingly going to be a little more stubborn on this than I thought. I thought he would have been traded already, if I'm being totally honest. I wasn't shocked he wasn't traded before the game last week because they played on a Thursday. But now we're here on a Wednesday. He's yet to be traded. And it seems like it might be a little cut off your nose to spite your face situation with Jacksonville, with Tom Coughlin not wanting to be backed into a corner by one of his players.
Oh, no.
But I think they could fix everything with Jalen if they just paid him. All this stuff about being upset about losing, about being upset about the way they're playing him, if they paid him, they could have their best player in the fold happy to be there. They're not going to do that. They might take option C, which is not trade him for now or pay him.
Nick, I think that Jalen being totally happy is totally out of the question now. Even if Tom Coughlin comes down and says, you know something, I'm going to pay you, Jalen's not going to forget about what Tom Coughlin said to him. So during that five-year contract, four-year contract, you can believe there's going to be another blow-up or two. Jalen, to me, is not a guy to seem like he would forget something that he seems like took very personal what Tom Coughlin said to him.
All right, let's move on to Washington. Jay Gruden sticking with Case Keenum despite an 0-3 start and despite Keenum coming off a five-turnover game on Monday night. Gruden says he doesn't want to go to Haskins because, quote, the season is not yet lost. Nick, your thoughts on Gruden's decision?
He made it clear this was going to be his decision after the game. I disagree with it, but that's almost, to me, not the bigger story here. What an absolute insult to Dwayne Haskins to say after the Case Keenum has a five-turnover game that the only reason we would go to him is if the season's lost. Mm-hmm. That to me confirms some of the preseason speculation that management wanted Haskins but the coach didn't. To which I would say to Jay Gruden, man, what quarterback do you like? You didn't like Kirk Cousins. He had an issue with him the whole time. Now you have a guy who was incredibly productive in college. You don't like him. You wanted him third on your depth chart start the year behind Colt and Case. I don't know what Jay Gruden wants. I do know this decision flow is going to lead to Jay Gruden not being the head coach of Washington much longer.
Yeah, we saw even last year, Cleveland off to a rough start, insert Baker Mayfield, instantly provided energy for them. Baltimore with Lamar, limited passing. Oh, this is going to be a disaster. Tremendous success there. Go on to be in the playoffs, which springboarded him into the season. That man, Genie, said, oh, nothing carries over from last season. That's not 100% true. Yeah. These young quarterbacks, they're going to play. He is the future of Washington, so he should play this year. So I don't like sending the message, though. The only way he's going to be playing
is if we're out of it.
Yes, totally. It's a bad message to send to the locker room.
Of course. So when he plays, that means our season's over.
All right, finally. Pro Football Focus put out its rankings of top quarterbacks this season. Brace yourself, Nick. Tom Brady is sitting as the top-ranked number one quarterback in the league. That thanks to his 7 touchdowns and 0 picks through 3 games. Also thanks to his insane ability to look 22 instead of 42, but probably more the touchdown part of it. See, is Tom Brady really still the best quarterback in the NFL?
Well, listen, Tom Brady, we just got to put something on this. We got a lot of respect for Tom Brady. But, man, we can't get him in no throwing contest with Aaron Rodgers or Patty Mahomes. Like, we know that. Like, Tom's played great. He's played better than we ever expected. He's had 2 Hall of Fame careers. I've never heard it said better than Nick. You take the first part of his career, Hall of Fame. You take the back part of his career, Hall of Fame. But right now, I don't know what football they've been watching. I know his numbers and everything are good, but Patty Mahomes is playing at a level that I've only seen a few quarterbacks play at. You can see how he flights the ball, how he puts air on the ball, how he gets to the third and fourth receiver without his number one weapon or number two, 1A weapon in Tyreek Hill being out, still getting big, big numbers from guys who we'd never even heard of. That's the force multiplier that we're talking about. Now, has Tom dealt with an awful lot? Absolutely. You got Josh Gordon. Don't know if he's going to be there week to week. And then they went out and brought his stepbrother in, A.B. He was only there 11 days. For Tom Brady, that's a lot to be dealing with.
And the offensive line. People in and out.
Listen, Brady's been excellent this year. No one should discount what Brady's done. Number 4 in rating, number 7 in yards, number 4 in touchdown, number 5 in yards per attempt. That's a really good year. But the only people in the world who think Tom Brady has played better this year than Patrick Mahomes is Gisele Bündchen and the people at Pro Football Focus. Brady don't even think it. And the big thing, I read their article where they said the best thing he has going for him is he has zero turnover-worthy plays. So one of the smart things Pro Football Focus does is if you throw a pass that should have been picked and is dropped, that is graded the same as if it actually is picked. They grade the process over results. Well, when your defense hasn't allowed a point, and you have played the dregs of the league, of course Tom Brady not going to take no damn chances. Of course Tom Brady is going to be incredibly cautious with the throws he makes. That I gave you Brady was 4-7-4-5 in rating yards, touchdowns, and yards per attempt. Patrick Mahomes, just for the record, is 1-1-1-1. He leads the NFL in everything, including the eye test. And so when Chris heard it this morning, you asked, I think, legitimately, did we give Brady a staggered start? Did he get some legacy points?
Yeah.
Pro Football Focus doesn't do that. They're supposed to be dispassionate. Their methodology on this, I have to disagree with. Brady is having the greatest year any 40-plus-year-old's ever had, aside from maybe Brady 2 years ago when he was 40. But let's not lie about who's been the best quarterback in football this year.
But it's like what you said, because of who their competition is, because of who he's got on offense, who he's throwing the ball to without a tight end, all of it, he's going into the season playing it safe. Short passes, sure passes. He doesn't want to get hurt. He wants to protect himself. He has a shoddy offensive line right now.
No doubt.
Doesn't all of this sort of contribute and add to his sort of, I don't want to call them padded stats, but protected stats maybe?
Well, this is the thing. It's about winning the game. There's nothing wrong with the way Tom Brady's playing. If you had that offensive line, you'd be getting rid of that ball, too. There were a few times where he was under duress. You could see that he wasn't comfortable. But starting this weekend against Buffalo, you're going to start to see. He's not going to have an easy time. And also Edelman. How much time is he going to miss? James Devlin, the fullback, he's on injured reserve. So Brady's going to have to overcome an awful lot. But the competition thus far, come on, the Jets, their quarterback's out with the high school kissing. The Dolphins, they're a high school team. Let's really be serious about this.
And just for the record, for Pats fans out there, if this is correct, if Brady is playing better than any quarterback in football, then cancel the season. Defense hadn't allowed a score, and you got a quarterback that's going to play better than everybody. But that's – I don't think it is correct, and I agree with Chris 1,000%. We're about to find out how good this Pats offense really is starting this week in Buffalo. An excellent defense, a team that presents a lot of problems on that side of the ball. Nobody questions how great the Patriots defense is. I do have questions about the Patriots offense, and I think so does Bill Belichick, which is why he didn't instantly cut Antonio Brown Friday morning. He waited until after practice that Friday, see if there was maybe a little external pressure. They're down a lot of key pieces on that offense. They're going to need Tom Brady to be this good for them to compete on a high level moving forward.
And I came from the school of thought that Bill Belichick is even looking out on the horizon. The reason why you take a chance with someone like AB is because you know there's a gunslinger in Kansas City. And you know that that offense, what they've done the last two times that you've played them, how long am I going to be able to hold Patty Mahomes and them off? That's the reason why that's why they take a chance with Josh Gordon, and that's why they go out there and take the chance with AB, knowing the firepower ultimately that they might face.
It's interesting. I haven't heard that.
I just made it up.
I thought so.
I think it's correct, though.
From one team that's clicking on all cylinders to another team that's seemingly stalled and looking for a mechanic. The 1-2 Eagles at the 3-0 Packers, Thursday Night Football on Fox. Despite the depth and the talent, the Eagles have been riddled with injuries, and they've struggled to keep Carson Wentz upright. But Wentz isn't concerned. He's a glass half full kind of guy.
We're not really looking at this as a bad spot. We're 1-2, yeah, but, you know, we have a lot of the season left, you know, and we're little things here and there in each game that we know we're going to get corrected and we're going to be in a good spot. And like I said, we're excited Thursday night to go show what we can do and get going back in the win column.
Nick, you said something interesting the other day with regards to the Eagles. It gets late early. And I'm wondering, are you concerned the Eagles won't turn things around until it becomes too late for them?
Well, you would officially be concerned about a day and a half from now if they lose to Green Bay. 1-3 since 1990. over a little over 300 teams have started 1-3. Only 31 have made the playoffs from that start. We talk about 0-2. We talk about 0-3. 1-3, you've got about a 10% chance, according to recent history. And all the focus has been on Carson Wentz and the receivers and the drops. I want to flip it to the other side as maybe the biggest reason for concern for Philadelphia. When they won their Super Bowl, we talked about, Chris talked about all the time, and he's right, they're big people. That's the offensive and the defensive line. That defensive line with all the depth, oh, they lose Malik Jackson, no problem. Now they're just down to Fletcher Cox and Timmy Jernigan, the D-tackles they had that won the Super Bowl. The Eagles have 2 sacks this year. That's 31st in the NFL. There are only 6 teams that have forced fewer turnovers than the Philadelphia Eagles. Fletcher Cox, for the first time in 3 years this past weekend, 0 tackles, 0 sacks, 0 quarterback hits, 0 quarterback hurries, did not show up in the stat sheet. He might be the best player on the team. If the Eagles are going to get out of this rut, if they are going to get going, it's not just the offensive line that needs to play up to its preseason billing. That defensive line needs to show up yesterday. That defensive line needs to start generating pressure on the opposing quarterback. They have not been able to do that, and that's been, to my eye, as big of a part of their reason for struggles as their receiving core and the much maligned receiving core with the drops and with the injuries.
Yeah, Tim Jernigan out since week number 2 with a broken foot there. They're missing his productivity. Darby's nicked up. So from a cornerback standpoint, we knew their secondary, especially their corners and their nickelbacks, would be questioned. They haven't been able to come up with plays. So I'm, before what happens in Green Bay, I'm already concerned, Jenna. I'm concerned about your Super Bowl pick, because even if they were to win this game, to get the 2-2, man, they got a gauntlet of 7 weeks.
Yes.
They got the Jets.
After Green Bay.
After the kissing disease is cured, he'll be back. Darnold will be playing. Then at Minnesota, at Dallas, at Buffalo, Chicago back at home. You're going to need a bye, and then you play the world champs, New England. Like, that is a brutal, brutal schedule. I'm concerned, even if they were playing good, with Dallas being undefeated, I'm concerned with them. Can they be at 500 at that point?
It's so funny you mentioned that. See, I had that written right here. That
the way
was
you
supposed
looked at me,
to be.
I thought I had read someone else's schedule.
No. I
normally don't operate on the schedule like that.
No, it's because that was supposed to be their tough stretch.
Yeah.
Three road games in a row against good defenses. Then you come home to face Chicago. Then it's a bye week, so you get to rest up before you face New England. That's supposed to be the stretch of football that you scuttle along at 2-3, but you have built yourself up enough of a margin of error that you can survive it. You go to 1-3, there's no more surviving. You have maybe 3 losses to play with the rest of the season.
Where's the winning streak in there?
Exactly right.
If this team is as good as we thought they were, and right now their biggest issue is the injury bug that they've been plagued with, once they're healthy, don't you have a little more confidence that they can attack this stretch of the schedule?
Yeah, absolutely. We do love their depth, but we did see the schedule out there. We thought before they started the season, they were a little bit better than Dallas. We thought that there were 2 playoff teams in that division. It seems like Dak Prescott, and they haven't hit the meat of their schedule. This is the type of schedule, Jenna, that when you have that type of roster, when you come through it, you're ready for the postseason. Like, you're tested. Your team is hardened. Like, it is ready for some good football. But you come through this and you're a couple games under 500. Say Dallas is off to a historic type start and everything. Those are the types of things that get seasons off and it's hard to recover from.
And I thought they'd be 3-0 at this point. That's the other you have a home game against Washington, a home game against Detroit, and you go to an Atlanta team that since Wentz has been there, even though he hasn't been playing in those games over since Doug Peterson's been there, let me put it like this, you've owned, like, okay, you're 3-0 going up against Green Bay in week 4 in what should be a marquee matchup. The other element is every year there's a team that everyone acknowledges is just a given, is going to be excellent, that falls off.
Yep.
I thought it was going to be the Rams. Remember, I picked the Rams to miss the playoffs because I was, who's the team that we all just say definitely is going to be good that falls off? I'm not saying that's Philadelphia. I'm not assigning that to them. But it don't look like it's going to be New England.
Yep, last year was Minnesota.
It doesn't look like it's going to be New England. Kansas City, pretty damn good. New Orleans finding ways to win despite the quarterback injury. So who is going to be the team that everyone, that half the pundits had at least in the conference championship game, if not beyond? Philadelphia right now would be the team you circle and say, I'm worried about them. And that's before they have to go to Green Bay in a game that could make the first quarter of their season a total disaster.
Yeah. The last thing they need is for me to put a curse on them.
Yeah.
They better invite me to alumni weekend.
Whenever that
going
is.
Going through this. Yeah. I need a team. Reach out to me. They got enough trouble, Jenna.
Back here on First Things First, we're joined by former NFL head coach Eric Mangini. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning. How are you? Good
to Welcome see you. To the show. Great to have you.
Nice. Good to be back.
What's up, C? Gave me a look.
No, I'm just moving along. That's all.
All right.
Just taking it all in.
We'll talk some Rams now. They followed
Rich
up
people conversation.
They knew. They followed up last season's Super Bowl appearance with a 3-0 start. But the biggest question then is still the biggest question now. Is Todd Gurley really healthy? He's fresh off a game with, wait for it, 43 rushing yards and zero catches. Head coach Sean McVay insists Gurley is not on a limited workload, and he himself has to do a better job of getting Gurley involved. Coach, do the Rams need Gurley to return to the Gurley of old if they want to be a Super Bowl threat again?
Well, when you look at his statistics, he's still averaging 4.6 yards a carry, and collectively, the team's averaging, or the team's in the top, what, five or seven in rushing yards per game, overall rushing yards. They're incorporating Malcolm Brown more into the mix, which I think is actually a good idea. It's a long season. He's consistently had heavy, heavy workloads. If he is still coming off an injury, the ability to mix in the carries or to split the carries a little bit more evenly, as long as you're not sacrificing production, which they really haven't sacrificed a tremendous amount of production, I think that's a good thing. You have a chance now later in the season for that back to be fresher. Now, that being said, with him being a significant threat and creating those eight-man boxes, it opens up for what they want to do all the time, which is the hard sell play action shots, and it also clears things up from a coverage perspective. We talk about this a lot for Jared Goff because he knows what he's getting with the eight-man boxes.
I'm far more concerned about this than it sounds you are. I think Todd Gurley's been, other than Aaron Donald, the most important player on this team over the last 3 years. Todd Gurley in 2017 and 2018, put those two seasons together, he averaged 1,900 yards from scrimmage and 20 touchdowns. And it's the reason I'm so concerned is he's not coming off a specific injury. He seems to have a degenerative knee problem. If it was, he got hurt. He's not yet up to full strength. There was an injury. There was a hit. Carson Wentz situation, something like that. I'd feel one way. And the other thing that is, to me, a flashing warning sign is, you mentioned yards per carry, which is 4.6, which is good, right in line about with his career average. He has 4 catches for 8 yards this year. He has been non-existent as a pass catcher out of the backfield, and where you have seen the numbers dip is on the Jared Goff side of things. Jared Goff is having very small sample size, but the worst start to a season he's had under Sean McVay. Now, are they still a Super Bowl threat? Well, if the defense continues like this, which is the best defense they've had since Sean McVay's been there, the most productive defense, they can offset an offense going backwards a bit. But this was a top three offense last year that does not look like a top three offense. And the reason they were that, to my eye, was because they had the most dynamic dual threat running back in the NFL. And I don't think Todd Gurley is that anymore, or at least he hasn't shown that to me.
There's a couple of things that caused me a great deal of concern. And part of Nick's concern is probably just an overflow from me. I don't know, guys. I played with a guy that had a degenerative knee. His name was Robert Smith. That was ultimately the reason why he retired, turned down a lot of money, was because he said, I want to be running, playing with my kids when I get older. I haven't seen running backs come back. There's only one Frank Gore. Besides that, there's no other running backs that I have seen that have degenerative knees. Nick makes a great point. This is not he tore his ACL, he tore his Achilles, he ruptured, he did something. No, he broke his leg. No, this is a condition that does not get better, and it only gets worse. And what I've seen over the last year is a running back last season who they need to give a break to recharge his battery. And then he was still only part of himself in one playoff game, and the next 2 weeks, he was a different player. Training camp, how'd they come back? He's only 25, right? Oh, he can't practice. The NFL is easier now than any other time in the history as far as the practices, the wear and tear on your body. They have him on a pitch count at training camp at 25. So for me, what happened last year, what's happening at training camp, and When was the last time you seen Todd Gurley run an explosive route down the seam, down the football field, the way he used to do the previous three seasons? No. I think Todd Gurley is damaged goods. I think that the Rams are doing the best job to spin this as much as possible because they don't want to look bad about that contract that they gave him. But there is no other running back that is his age, fits his profile, that's on some type of pitch count.
I remember Curtis Martin talking about dealing with pain and understanding that there's going to be a certain amount of pain that goes when you're dealing with an injury. There's going to be a certain amount of pain that you have to get through, and it's different than re-injuring whatever you have. And that may be some of it for Todd Gurley, is understanding that there's always going to be pain because it is a degenerative knee, and how much pain can you deal with, and how do you deal with that and coming to terms with that, and that'll help him. I think the Rams are doing a good job because when you do have something that's a wear and tear based injury, to take some of the wear and tear off him, to maximize what he can give later in the season so that he is a threat. He maintains the ability to be a threat deep into the season and into the playoffs. I like the approach of splitting up the carries and taking some workload off as he learns about his ability to deal with this injury and this amount of pain.
Yeah, I would love if that was the number one plan. We have a great player, Ezekiel Elliott, Le'Veon Bell. We have a great player. You know something? We're going to draft someone behind him to take that workload off. I don't think it came that way. I think that they discovered that knee was not getting better. They gave him all that guaranteed money. And then they decided, you know something? We're going to need some help to be able to take the load off of Todd Gurley.
But doesn't a limited run game now affect their play action game and what they're going to do moving
forward?
That
was the perfect question, and the numbers say absolutely right. Where Jared, listen, every quarterback's numbers are better in play action than not play action. You talk about all the time, the best quarterbacks, when they know you're going to pass, can you pass? The reason play action's effective, suck up the linebackers. The defense has to deal with the threat of the run and the pass. Last year, Jared Goff was as effective as any player in the league on play action passes. This year, that productivity has evaporated. Now, maybe it's just a small sample. Maybe it's bad luck on a couple throws. Or maybe it is that, plus teams are less afraid of the play action because you no longer have the most dynamic, deadly running back in football back there.
But that's not true. He's averaging 4.6 yards a carry. Malcolm Brown's averaging 4.9 yards a carry. They're a top 10 rushing team. So is every team going to come up and say, okay, we're willing to concede almost 5 yards every time they throw the ball? Sometimes with that play action, it's a formation-based thing, too. Defenses catch up. They've studied a lot of Rams film, so you need to build that hard sell play action out of different looks. If you keep giving the same looks.
Different formations.
Because I can tell you, when they get in tight, and those tight split receivers, the percentage of hard sell play action from them jumps dramatically. I'm sure there's some down and distance tendencies. I'd imagine first play of the series, hard sell play action jumps dramatically. They got to break those tendencies, too.
Back here with Coach Mangini, we're talking Thursday Night Football on Fox. It's the Packers and the Eagles from Lambeau. Yes, Green Bay is undefeated, but also, yes, the reason why is not number 12. It's that stout defense, something we don't talk about a lot, but Rodgers, who couldn't heap enough praise.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
But the standard and expectations are very high here, and we haven't met them on offense. Thankfully, our defense has not only been opportunistic but stout, holding them to field goals in the red zone, taking the ball away, putting us in good field position. It's time for us to do our part on offense moving forward. We're going to play some, a stretch of really good football teams. And at some point, we can't expect our defense to shut everybody down. They have been. But at some point, the offense is going to have to wake up and start making some plays.
All right, Coach, so how do the Packers do that? How does that Packers offense wake up, start making plays, get back to that Aaron Rodgers standard?
Well, the one thing this offense is doing really well is protecting the football. That's been a huge part of this. The turnover differential, they're number one in the NFL in turnover differential, and that's been the difference in most of these games. And when you look at the three defenses they've played, I know we can say, yeah, it doesn't matter which defense you play, but they've played three of the best defenses in the league in consecutive weeks, which makes it challenging. Looking at this offense, as much as he talked about audibling, he is audibling a lot. And it's been really effective. Some of the biggest plays have been because of him audibling. There's a series against Minnesota where one third down, it was like third and four, he checks the max protection, throws it out to Devontae Adams, first down. Then it's third and two, they're on like the 7-yard line. He makes another check, throws it out, first down. So there's the element of Matt LaFleur seeing him do what he wanted to do and how effective it is and him accepting that. And I think that Aaron Rodgers, seeing where the team is headed, is accepting more and more elements of what Matt LaFleur is trying to do offensively. I'd say the best example of that is the hard sell play action shots that you see with the Rams from that family tree. First play of the game against Minnesota, against Denver, they hit one of those. Mm-hmm. Against Chicago, they couldn't get anything going. They hit one of those. It's going to get better and better, and they're going to face totally different defenses here shortly, and we'll see a big spike.
Yeah, I think the offense will catch up to it. I just want Aaron to realize, don't forget what the goal of a quarterback is, even from Little League. It's the guy that gets his team on the winning bus after the game. That's the number one stat. Only one time have they been a top 10 defense since he's been there. That's 2012. That's when they won the Super Bowl. Get used to that. The elements are going to change. Be able to use it to your advantage. Don't put pressure on yourself to realize you don't have to. Didn't they score 40 in a playoff game and lose?
They scored 51 in a playoff game and lost.
I mean, like, he doesn't have that type of pressure. It's a different world. John Elway, at the end of his career, after going to several Super Bowls by himself and losing, then they changed that team. They became a defensive, run-oriented team, and John got two Super Bowls at the end by driving the car and realizing, you know something, there's certain parts of the game, and Aaron, where he is, he's in a lot better physical shape as a quarterback than John was at the end there. So for me, I would just be patient. I would like to see Matt LaFleur become a little more creative on third down. I would like to see him try to develop another third receiver, and that's hard to do in the games, where first downs are precious, every throw is precious, and the offense is not having any type of success. But I'm going to lean on that defense. I'm going to lean on Preston, Za'Darius Smith. I'm going to lean on those young draft picks at corner and at safety, those guys that are making plays and continuing to book these wins. Imagine Aaron Rodgers with a defense with home field advantage.
Right.
Okay.
And healthy. And, I mean, he said going, which is critical, it's important at every point, but especially the 1 week a year where you've got the super short week playing on a Thursday, that he's never felt better than he did coming off that game against Denver. Here, the competition point of as far as defenses they faced, it works in both directions. They faced two great defenses so far this year in Chicago and Minnesota, and one defense that hasn't played great but has great personnel in Denver. Conversely, one of the reasons you would imagine the Packers' defense has maybe looked a little better than it actually will at the end of the year is when you play Trubisky, Flacco, with Kirk Cousins sandwiched in between, that your defense might be a little inflated. Say that to say this. The defense, I don't think, is going to be a top three defense this year. Now, top 10 defense is standard. You've been holding them to. Can they be that? Absolutely. But the offense has to get better, and I think it will get better. The offense right now, third downs, you mentioned two specific third downs that he checked into. Okay, well, that's two of their 9 third down conversions on the season. You've got to be better in third downs. You can't have 267 yards of offense per game as they're averaging. That's Aaron Rodgers about what he's averaging passing per game for his career. And so I would imagine it's a lot of things. It's a new system. LaFleur and Rodgers kind of figuring out each other's rhythms. Mm-hmm. It's that preseason, conversely to what I thought years ago before Chris enlightened me on this, practice even just in the NFL.
Just another little spillover, just a little knowledge dripped on him.
Practice in preseason, it turns out, matters even at the highest level. Aaron Rodgers was supposed to play in one preseason game, his back tightened up on him, then was going to play in the next preseason game. It was on some field in Canada that they deemed unfit. So the plan, it wasn't a McVay plan where he's not going to play at all. He was going to play. They clearly thought he needed to play, and he ended up not playing. But the fact that we can say all these things, that the Packers can be scoring 19 points per game, can be bottom three in the NFL in third down conversions, and they're 3-0 with two wins against two good divisional opponents, that speaks incredibly well to their potential for the rest of the season moving forward, leading into tomorrow night's game against Philly.
What I like about this team is the receivers are young, but they're big. They've got a big group of receivers, 6'3", 6'4". Then you put in Mercedes Lewis, who's 6'6", Jimmy Graham, he's 6'5". This is a big team. This is a team that you talked about the learning curve. That's a big part of this. They need to come to terms with or set whatever the relationship is going to be, how much of it's going to be Aaron Rodgers, how much of it's going to be Matt LaFleur, and I don't think they've found that balance yet of which scheme they're going to settle on. But as they do, they have a chance to be really good offensively.
Maybe I read between the lines a little too deeply. I got the sense in talking about how good the defense was and questioning the offense and his play and the play, not the play calling, but just the offense in general, that he sort of has been patient for the last couple weeks. Nothing's really gotten going. It better get going soon. Not that there's a threat that he's going to take over or butt heads a little bit with Matt LaFleur, but just a continuation of the narrative that we had seen in the preseason.
I think it is a continuation of a narrative, but I think it's an unfair one. I think Aaron Rodgers, when he's criticizing the offense, is criticizing himself. No one is more responsible for it. I don't think Aaron looks at anyone in that organization as more responsible for that offense getting going than himself. And so when he says we need to hold up our end of the bargain, I don't think he's saying, man, I'm doing my job.
No. I don't think he's doing that. But you don't think he's saying, well, if things don't change, I may take a few more chances at audibly.
But they haven't needed to. I mean, they're 3-0. They've trailed for 6 minutes all year. Like, they haven't needed to take chances.
When you watch him, he's taking a lot of control of that offense. You see him come to the line of scrimmage. I don't know what the progression is from the play coming in to the final play, but you can see him talking, changing things, and it feels more like the Aaron Rodgers offense that we've seen historically than a traditional Matt LaFleur offense. So there is a coming to terms with who's going to ultimately control this, and if they aren't more productive soon, Aaron's going to keep taking more and more control of this.
Jen, I think I'm with you. Aaron Rodgers is not absent of ego. And I believe coach is saying he has far more control of this offense than right now they're alluding to. But will he start trying to do more in third downs because they're not moving the stick? So Aaron Rodgers has developed this reputation. I know, Nick, you said, well, it's not fair. Well, it's fair on this show because we don't depict him in one certain way. Will Aaron Rodgers change as they go through the season? Or will he be Brady-ish-like and be satisfied that the offense is in the bottom third in the NFL, even though they win games? I think it's fair to say that's something we should watch, because if Aaron is consistent, then he will have an issue if he's not as productive if he has been in the past.
Here we go. Week 4 battle for supremacy in the AFC East between one no-brainer and one brainer. Patriots, to the surprise of no one, and the Bills.
Who wrote that?
I did.
I promise, Jenna.
Okay, you know what? I thought that was a great line. You don't hear it very often.
There's a reason.
It's so hard working with you. Both the Bills and the Patriots sit at 3-0. But the last two times the Bills started 3-0, they missed the playoffs. That being said, Belichick knows that Josh Allen presents all sorts of challenges for his team.
Definitely. Definitely. He's a very good player. He has a lot of physical talent, but you can see the game he's catching up with the game in terms of his control of the line of scrimmage, recognizing defenses, reading coverages, making decisions. And I think all that's certainly improved in the last year, as it does with, you know, most all players, especially ones at that position. So, but he's a very talented player, and he's, again, continues to, you know, get better.
All right, see, I'll direct this one to you. Do the 3-0 Bills present a serious threat to the Patriots? Should they be on upset alert this weekend?
They should be, and the reason why is anytime you play in your division, they have more scouting information. They have more intel. They know more of your details.
They're going to play you closer than any other game, even if you do have an absent in talent. I do believe that this defense, especially their front seven, they do match up well against New England, against an offensive line that is patchwork at best. How good is that offensive line? Can Buffalo take them out of their running game, put pressure on Tom Brady? Yes, I do believe that. But a lot of it with Brady now is going to be tackling, because he's not going to hold the ball an awful long time. He's going to get the ball out of his hand, in guys' hands, in space, so they can make plays. So can Buffalo tackle? Because I do believe that their front seven, it matches up well. I believe that their defensive coordinator, their defensive staff, led by their head coach, who used to be a defensive coordinator, he's always put together good game plans going against Josh McDaniel and Belichick. So coming in, they'll have some confidence. With that offensive line, with wholesale changes up and down that offensive line, I'm sure Buffalo's defensive front, they have tremendous confidence facing them this Sunday.
When you looked at the season going into it, one of the reasons that I said I thought Buffalo would be a playoff team in the AFC was, if you looked at the schedule, which I love to do, we said this could be 3-0 versus 3-0 in week four at home in Buffalo in what would be one of their bigger home games in recent or even not-so-recent Bills history. Do they present a threat to the Patriots this week? Absolutely yes. Do they present a threat to the Patriots to win the division? Absolutely not. These are two separate things. The Pats, their preseason is over now. They are now facing a real defensive line. They are now facing a Tre'Davious White, the guy who the only reason we'd said his name on this show was because Gronk dropped that people's elbow on him. He might be right now, this moment, the most productive corner in the NFL. The Bills' defense, despite the fact that the offense is turning the ball over and the offense is putting the Bills' defense in short fields, the two things you don't want your offense to do, the defense has been excellent week in, week out. The Patriots, left tackle on IR, center on IR, right tackle has been hurt. Fullback on IR, the first-round pick receiver on IR, Antonio Brown not on the team, Edelman with a chest injury, Josh Gordon with some wrist injury, I think it was, at least that's what was listed. This Patriots offense has not only its first tough test, its first test at all this season. Now, I'm not sitting here saying the Bills are going to do something they rarely do, which is beat the Patriots at home. But Tom Brady, the last couple of years, his numbers, I think he has more touchdowns than interceptions, playing in this stadium. Now, they're lucky that it's not happening in December when it's going to be a potential snowstorm. The conditions should be decent, but no, this should be a low-scoring, grinded-out game for New England. This is, if Brady is, as Pro Football Focus put it, been the best quarterback in football this year, he's going to have to show it this weekend, because I think the Bills are for real. I think there's a 9 or 10-win team, thought that before the year, and I think that's not because Josh Allen has been great. The quarterback for Buffalo has been improved, but it's been a defensive team that has gotten them to 3-0.
So if you're the Bills, where's the first place you take advantage of the New England Patriots? The first place you're going to game plan to attack?
I would say that offensive line. You got to try to attack that offensive line, which in turn you're going to take them and take Sony Michel out of that running game. If they try to go to Burkhead, if they try to go to James White, they're not as effective runners as Sony Michel is. How are they when they're at their best? That's when Sony Michel is running the ball between the tackles, which leads to play action pass, which leads to bigger shots down the field for Brady. That, to me, is the biggest advantage. The biggest disadvantage to Buffalo happens to be their passing game going against Stephon Gilmore, best cornerback right now in football, playing with the best secondary in football, with typically a top three, top five defense. So, advantage to the defensive front of Buffalo. Great question by you, Jenna. Disadvantage is, how can the quarterback and the wide receivers operate against what we consider to be a great secondary?
The Patriots have not allowed a point in the first half since the playoff game against the Chargers. Their defense has not allowed a touchdown of any kind, defensive touchdown, I should say, since the playoff game against the Chiefs. The Patriots' defense is exceptional. So Josh Allen's going to struggle. One thing about the Pats' offense, Bill Belichick seems a little nonplussed, if you will, with Sony Michel. He has not been as productive this year as he was last year. If you saw in the week three game, all of a sudden Rex Burkhead's getting more involved because they were dropping down the depth chart. So Buffalo is going to, I would imagine, sell out against the pass and to try to make sure those big plays New England's been killing people with throughout the year and see if they can contain the running game. But for Buffalo to win this game, it's got to be in the teens. I don't know if they can hold the Patriots in the teens, but this is the Pats' toughest test up to this point of the season by a wide margin.
All right, let's move on to the Rams now. They followed up last season's Super Bowl appearance with a 3-0 start, but the biggest question then is still the biggest question now. Is running back Todd Gurley really healthy? He's fresh off a game with just 43 rushing yards and just zero catches. Head coach Sean McVay insists Gurley is not on a limited workload and he himself has to do a better job of getting Gurley involved. Nick, do the Rams need Gurley to return to form if they do want to be a Super Bowl threat?
The defense is playing so well right now that even without the Todd Gurley we're used to, this team maybe could be one of the best teams in the NFC, but not at all the way it was last year. Last year, it was a top three offense with a sensational defensive player, a couple good corners once they got healthy, but a defense that could be had. So even if Gurley were out for the year, because the defense is playing so well, I wouldn't X them out. But for this offense to look anything like the offense of last year, they need Todd Gurley to be Todd Gurley again, and I don't see that happening. Todd Gurley, his first 2 years with Sean McVay, averaged 1,900 yards and 19 touchdowns. Those were his averages over those 2 years. This year, he's splitting carries with Malcolm Brown. He's outside of the top 10 in the NFL in rushing. He's outside of the top 20 in yards per carry. He has one touchdown, and most concerning, he has four catches for 8 yards. Mm-hmm. Four catches for 8 yards for a guy who averaged nearly 700 yards receiving each of the last two seasons. So these are almost separate questions to me. Like, the Rams, can they find a different way to be a contender? Maybe. Can the Rams' offense be what carries them? In my eyes, absolutely not. Not without Todd Gurley.
Nick, I had to go back even a little bit further. He actually has 8 catches in his last 16 games with a long gain of 9 yards. So they can say
in last six games.
In last six games. Yes.
Yep.
8 catches, 13 yards over the last six games, and the longest being of 9 yards.
Ever since the knee flared up.
Regardless of what they say, Jenna, there's no way that lack of productivity with one of the guys that was special at catching the ball out of the backfield, generating so many big plays, and at training camp, after an offseason, you know what? I'm going to start him on a pitch count. 25 years old, I can't practice 2 practices in a row. That, to me, seems like there's still a problem. And to me, it seems like that front office, that organization, how they're going to handle, they're going to keep massaging this and protect from saying, you know something? We signed him to a bad deal because his knee, if it's arthritic, which I think it is, and that's what it's been reported, it's not going to get better. And as he ages, his productivity will continue to slip. That's why you go out and have someone like Malcolm Brown. It's not that, oh, you know something? We're trying to take care of Todd Gurley. There's no running back that's a great running back in NFL history that they had someone that was competent behind them and they just said, you know something? We're going to give him 5 to 8 carries a game. It doesn't work like
not
that.
Not at his age, certainly.
Absolutely.
Maybe if it's a guy in year 9 who's still – no. Not if the guy is in the prime of his career. And see, it's killing their play-action game. In this limited sample, I get it. Last year, Jared Goff in play action, a 113 rating, 16 touchdowns, 2 picks. This year, a 52 rating, 0 touchdowns, 3 picks. Teams aren't respecting the play action. Now, Sean McVay's got to adjust. And the other thing that we've got to figure out here is how much of their offense stagnating this year is Gurley and how much of it is every D coordinator in football watched the Super Bowl and said, I can't be Bill Belichick, but I can pretend to be maybe 1 week a year playing the Rams. See what he did and see how he slowed them down. That is an element of this as well. And Jared Goff, who they just signed, he's got to be better. But you need your most talented offensive player to be a viable threat down in, down out. And he just hasn't been this year for them. And that, to me, is the biggest issue with their offense.
Look at Kyle Shanahan. that offense in San Francisco. I know people say, well, Jimmy Garoppolo, it hadn't been explosive. Like when he first started calling plays, now McVay, the league has seen him for a few years. They start to understand your sets. They start to understand your formations, and they start to clue in to where you want to throw the ball on play action. So they're far more prepared for this, and Todd Gurley is still hampered, and I believe that we will never see the Todd Gurley that we saw in 18 and in 17 because of that arthritic knee.
Right now, though, with that defense, they are still 3-0.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.